The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome back, everyone, to Vox Markets. My name is Paul Hill. I'm delighted today to be able to speak to accomplished investor and ex-City fund manager Ian Staples on Vox Exchange. So welcome, Ian.
Hi, good afternoon.
Yeah, well, we've had lots of big macro data this week, not least the sort of the budget on Wednesday and the strong US payrolls this afternoon. But before we sort of dig into the details, I don't suppose you could quickly run through what type of investor you are, what kind of companies you look for, the characteristics, just briefly.
I think the quickest way to describe it would be sort of a growth at a reasonable price. I like growth companies. I like quality companies, those that can sustain their returns on capital, operating margins through different types of market or the sort of the market cycle or the economic cycle. So there's very important sort of a qualitative assessment of a company's brand and reputation, how good it is at innovation, sort of relationships it has with its customers, the sort of internal setup it has. COVID was a great way of learning about how different companies behaved under what were very peculiar circumstances. And also, it's very, very useful sometimes to look at or to consider a company that has something truly unique. So, for example, Elementis has the only hectorite mine in the world, which it uses to make very successful products. And you could think about, for example, perhaps more prosaically, British Airways with its landing slots at Heathrow. Now we've come out of the pandemic and things are getting back to normal. They're impossible to replicate. So it's that sort of qualitative framework of qualities that a company has. Then I combine that with a quantitative analysis of the good old-fashioned stuff, EV sales, operating margins, and all those good things.
Yeah, I guess that sort of USP and the differentiation is, you know, highly attractive, particularly if in the small and mid-cap sector where they've seen a lot of M&A recently. And I don't even want to talk through that because we've had another bid this morning, Mattioli Woods, which is a sort of like a wealth manager. We also had Spirant Technology earlier this week at a big premium, about 60%. And we also have an ongoing sort of takeover saga at Equals, which I know you were one of the biggest shareholders. You'd seen that very early and sort of kept on adding to your position. So just broadly on small cap, mid cap valuations, and also if you could just touch on what your latest thoughts on Equals. Obviously, it's when you were the fund manager, but I'd be interested. I know investors would be really interested to hear your thoughts.
Okay, there's a few questions there, so let me try and don't worry. Let me try and pick them off. From an M&A perspective, you could say sort of the UK stock market is almost in liquidation mode, isn't it? It feels like you're sort of watching the closing moments of Pound Stretcher on your local high street. You know, you got some quality stuff. You know, unlike TAT, you've got some high quality companies that might be going through a temporary cyclical downturn through no fault of their own, but they're world leading in what they do. And there's no interest, or seemingly very little interest, from UK investors or global asset allocators to pick up on these opportunities. So you're seeing the M&A is, notwithstanding Mattioli was this morning with Pollen Capital, it's typically between companies buying one another, which means that those management teams are feeling bullish about the future. So no matter how we might feel and how bearish we might feel about owning equity as an asset class, companies out there going out and doing real things for a living feel very positive. Now, in terms of the sort of deals that we've seen, we saw Mattioli Woods this morning that we've already mentioned. There's DS Smith in packaging is in the FTSE 100. That was the old paper takeover from Mondi. You've got Spirant, world leader in testing telecoms technology. Wincanton, that was the last sort of logistics operator quoted in the UK market. I mean, you've seen DX Group disappear over the last year. Now Wincanton, there's no logistics operator. If you want to expose some of your, have some exposure to your portfolio to that particular stream. And I just think it's just going to continue. in terms of these quality companies being snapped up. I think sort of the most sort of a question to ask is does a bid play enter into an investment thesis? No, not really.
Yes. Yes.
I think, the thing is, it's I would call that lazy thinking.
Well, the reason I don't mind being lazy if it makes you money.
The entire market is like that, isn't it? So unless you're at sort of this, perhaps what you might say, the fruity end of AIM stocks, concept stocks, which have taken a battering because some of them were of infinite duration, loss-making, and the high interest rates have clattered their share prices. I think, you know, I saw a report on courtesy of Bloomberg showing UK stocks, and they currently trade at a 40% discount to global developed peers. Now, that's just incredible. Now, there's been all sorts of debate. I don't want to get into politics, but I think you have to mention Brexit. Some people blame Brexit and like to draw the line of that chart of UK stocks versus the peers from 2016. And indeed, the derating is marked, but so is the rest. So I really do think that if this sort of seeming exodus continues, you're not going to see much in terms of UK small cap will not exist in 4 or 5 years, which is the truly worrying thing, because it's the lifeblood of the economy.
Yeah.
Is it going to be a bit of PLC?
Is it going to be a bit self-fulfilling, though? Because if you get a lot of takeover bids, it puts money into sort of fund managers' hands that hopefully then redeploy. And it's got to go somewhere. So hopefully it will go into small and mid-caps if it's come out of small and mid-caps. Therefore, push prices up and hopefully then start the IPO market.
Yeah, unfortunately, there doesn't seem to be much evidence for that. So I have to contradict you. I think I would completely agree with you. The UK market is in a doom loop, and that it seems impossible to break. But I think I don't know what the record was. I haven't checked, but I think there have been 33 months up until about perhaps November, December last year. Mm. There have been 33 or 34 months of consecutive outflows out of the UK small and mid-cap sector.
Yeah.
So even if you are seeing, it looks very good if you've got Wincanton or Spirent and you've got a nice 50% turn and it's all settled and you get the cash, you know, very often you're facing a weight of redemption, certainly if you're in perhaps a more retail-biased fund in a large institution. Well, the money is very nice, but you have to give it up next week to satisfy the redemptions.
Yeah.
And what about, very often, sorry, go on.
What about equals? The, you know, basically the Forex, because that's had a bit of interest from private equity, Madison Dearborn, and had an early interest from a trade buyer, Fleet Corps. And it's been sort of like under offer or discussions for the last 5 months, etc. But it did seem as though, you know, there's been trading statements and they're all being in line. Obviously, they can't say much. It just was really sort of what your view is on that one. I'm guessing it's a bit of a sort of like, if they don't, then it's a quality business that stays on the market. And if they do, then you might get an extra sort of like bonus.
Yes, it's pretty much that. I think certainly in the tech sector, I mean, Alico is one of the leaders in the build tech project management and visualization software, you know, very, very impressive. But when
this
you're sitting...
This is Equals.
Sorry.
We'll come on to Alico
later
on.
I'm getting excited.
We'll come on to Alico later on.
I beg your pardon. Equals, of course, is the fintech banking software.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, the Forex.
In provider. Very, yeah, used to be a big holder of that when I was at Schroders. Now, I think the thing is here that given the growth and the excellence of the product, it's it felt that, you know, like many companies at the sort of the 150 to 300 million market cap range, they're getting very frustrated with basically it feels like they're pushing water uphill. You know, sort of on the day-to-day basis, they're delivering their numbers, they're growing the business, they're not issuing lots of paper. And yet, here they are, still relatively not excitingly rated.
Mm.
And even if you look at the share price chart, normally be Illico or Equals. Now you'd want them to when you deliver that sort of delivery of excellence.
Yeah, you did rather well there, didn't you? I could tell.
Yeah, I'm trying to be modest for my former colleagues.
I was just looking at the chart there, and the last 3 years it's been sort of like upwards to the right, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's sort of be like those starting in the bottom left-hand corner and finishing in the top right.
One of
our favourites, but no, more sort of seriously, I just think they sort of the almost feeling of not the business isn't moribund. The business is going really, really well. It's blazing away, but the share price just hasn't reflected that in the past 2 years or so.
Yeah.
And understandably, when there's a lot of management incentivized by the share price, you know, it becomes a real concern that how do I keep these people are delivering me fantastic work day in, day out, delivering fantastic numbers. It's not all just the CEO and the CFO. They do the presentation, they do it very well. But you know, there's a fantastic team that is incentivized. How do I keep hold of good people that are delivering good stuff if the share price doesn't reflect the sort of numbers that we're delivering? So I think the last RNS that Equals had was on the 21st of Feb this year.
Yeah.
Where they contacted a limited number of counterparties. But still, you know, the share price not really getting too excited about the company more or less being up for sale. Mm. I mean, very interestingly, the results are out the week commencing the 15th of April.
Yeah.
So just after Easter. So they wouldn't have been making positive noises and trying to sell the company if it's going to be anything less than in line with expectations. And you'd certainly expect a strong set of numbers mid-April.
Yeah, no, I would agree. So let's wait and see. Okay, let's if anybody wants to ask any questions, please just pop them into the chat bot on YouTube, and I'll ask Ian, or if they're to me, then ask me. So please feel free to ask any questions, guys. Okay, let's move to some good stock ideas. What about Renew? Because obviously that's something you know very well. It's a sort of like a industrial services business that sort of mainly does the services for non-discretionary mission critical activities, things like nuclear and defense and rail, I think. Do you want to take us through your latest? Because it isn't your archetypal contractor, is it? This one, this very much is a sort of high performance business.
This is, I think, perhaps the biggest misconception around this particular stock. Because first of all, it's very good at what it does, and it's got some very fussy customers. In terms of the utilities, network rail, and you certainly don't mess around when it comes to nuclear. So they do a lot of work. I don't know what Sellafield calls itself these days. I was going to call it Windscale, but that just shows you how old I am. they capitalized at 700 million, and they got results, I think, on our next news anyway, on the 2nd of April. And they had a very good AGM update at the end of Jan. But the great thing about this could be what I've always liked about Paul Scott and his team.
This is the Stockopedia guy, Paul Scott.
No, the CEO of Renew.
I was going to say, I was thinking, I've heard of that name before. Okay, yeah. Right, so the CEO. Sorry, apologies.
Yeah, and they, as you say, they do critical maintenance of UK infrastructure. And I think the important thing is that it's via network agreements. Mm. So there's no sort of, you know, there's very little lumpiness. If you look at the working capital, it's very, very clean. There's no nasty, horrible swings in or swings out of cash during the course of the year. And if, you know, to the extent that there are contractual outflows over a course of a year or 18 months, it's virtually negligible. So the fact that they first of all got these network agreements avoids the lumpiness, they got consistency, they got a great reputation with their customers, so rail, water, roads, and nuclear. They got fantastic net cash balance sheet, something like, I think, 35 million net cash, which allows them to pursue sensible M&A. So you've got some sort of really quite funky, clever people doing, let's say, rail electrification or nuclear fabricators, funnily enough, in Cumbria.
What's the revenue cover on it and with the visibility? I'm guessing they've probably got a pretty good order book, haven't they?
Yes. Yeah, because of these network agreements. I mean, there might be delays. So, for example, yeah. I don't know which, in the water industry, it's called AMP. I don't know which one we're up to at the moment, probably yes. AMP 8 or AMP 9.
Yeah.
But the system of spend or the schedule of spend is set out on almost a three to five year basis.
Yeah.
So the work that they've got coming and the level of sophistication required is typically well known in advance. Mm. And I can't remember what the railway ones are called. But there's the same sort of spending period control period.
Yeah, they're right. They're all got these funny names, haven't they?
CP26. You know? I keep wanting to say COP, but that's the climate change thing,
yeah.
isn't it? But
and I think politically wise, you know, both sides of the aisle are wanting sort of like infrastructure spend to improve the water, no doubt about it, with lots of flood, you know, sort of like to prevent sort of pollution on the flooding zones and this sort of stuff coming out of sewers and into reservoirs. Yeah. And likewise, you know, we've got rail is massive and, new nuclear or just life extension on nuclear is huge. Roads is pretty big as well. So you're right. There's everything there. Okay. Another one in that industrial sector that I'll raise is MPAC, which I know you used to own as well. It's basically an automation manufacturing business that sort of specialise in high speed packaging. So it does things like blister packs in the healthcare sector. It also does packaging machines to do sort of in the beverages sector, cans and this sort of stuff and food. So key customers, things like people like Mars and some of the big pharmaceuticals companies like GSK. I think it's about 40% type in each of those particular sectors. The shares, just put it up there. The shares have recovered a bit or quite, you know, just recently, but they're still trading at roughly round about 10 times PE. So they're not expensive. And that's just really on the base business. And they've got this sort of like contract with Freya to do electric batteries, which could just be an absolute, you know, gold mine for them. So they've got the key trends are sort of, you know, production automation, productivity, EVs and all things moving towards electrification. And also I think they're trying to beef up their services business, which goes from about 20-25% to 30%. Is there anything what your latest views on this one? Because obviously you were the biggest holder actually of the shares.
Yeah. Yeah, if memory serves, I think we were. I think the great thing about this is the strength of the innovation. It goes back to those sort of those attributes I was talking about earlier at the start of our chat. You know, constantly innovating, being able to adapt. You know, as once upon a time, their machines might well have been used perhaps in some parts of the packing industry called tobacco. That, you know, it's sort of it's the naughty word to say, but you know, people in Japan and China do like to shall we say, and still enjoy that particular plant.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's great demand for that kind of kit, but of course that's not ultimately sustainable like any sensible business. They wanted not just do tobacco, but all sorts of other products. And I think now that they're coming into not electric vehicles, but certainly into batteries and the packaging around there, you know, the sort of, you could take a skeptical short-term view about people not really wanting to drive electric cars, but over the next 10, 15 years, there's a huge mega trend behind them, which will serve MPAC very well.
Yeah. And I think they've also got their pension schemes is basically just about sorted. They just need to do a couple of extra sort of pay contributions, don't they, for the next 2 years, I think is.
Yes.
And then, and they can put it out. Yeah. So, I mean, it's got I was just looking at the numbers and it's got a sort of like a net cash balance of about 2 million, traded about 10 times PE. So, and with a bit of luck, they'll re-kick the dividend going forward as well.
Yeah. Well, once you're not paying the,
Yeah, that's right.
The pension off, you can probably upgrade your plant and then perhaps think about a dividend.
Yeah, okay. Well, we have one question coming in from El Saint. Any thoughts on Anpario or Enpario? It's basically the animal feed company that does, I think it does basically additives, additives to feed. I don't know if you've had a look at this one, but...
Not for a very long time. Not for a very long time. I think the... what attracted me that one in the long, like I say, a good 6-7 years ago was its innovation, trying to do sort of the natural line, and what I couldn't quite get a handle on, perhaps it's my own fault, was I couldn't get a clear idea of the strength of its distribution, how it's actually going to get out. It's very interesting, sometimes very interesting and innovative products to actually gain market share. And I actually sort of rather than sort of going to source, I went one step forward. So NWF, previously Northwest Farms,
they do
a lot more. They do fuel and all sorts of things. And also Wednesday.
Yeah, okay. That's the animal distribution.
So big shareholder in those. So whilst they, Wednesday and perhaps to a lesser extent, NWF would suffer from the vagaries of the weather, which if you've watched Clarkson's Farm, we'll all understand.
Yes, my wife and my grandparents, my mother-in-law love it. Absolutely love it.
Yeah, I didn't know farming was so complicated. Anyway, thank you, Mr. Clarkson.
The tractor, yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
and I think certainly NWF, it's had a change in management recently. They're very well respected. CEO earned his right to retire and spend a bit more time on the golf course or whatever he wants to do. So good for him.
Okay,
he'd done a cracking job.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah. I mean, I think it's got cash on the balance sheet, if I remember right, and I think it trades at a reasonable PE, so it looks a sensible stock, and it should be in growth in terms of all natural ingredients for animals. So as they move out, you know, antibiotics is taken out of the food chain. Okay, we've got another one now on HVivo, which has really been sort of taken off over the last 2 years. It does sort of like challenge trials for drug development, particularly in sort of vaccines. Where they take sort of like human guinea pigs, put them into a hotel, and see whether the a trial vaccine will actually help them and what sort of effects it is. Do you want to take us through this one? Because the shares have done really well. I'll put it on in a moment.
This company is being transformed when a gentleman by the name of Mo Khan.
That's right. Yeah,
became CEO. He had a, if memory serves, he had a great track record in working and running contract research organizations.
Yeah,
and before he came along, HVivo had some great ideas, but you didn't always get the impression that it was perhaps the most commercially aware organization. To say that Mr. Khan has changed that for the better would be an understatement. Now, basically, as you say, Paul, what they do is they do testing infectious and respiratory diseases using human challenge trials. Now, what I didn't appreciate about these human challenge trials is that they get a relatively small number of people, say 40, 50, maybe 60. Volunteers, but basically people off the street or the Clapham omnibus, as you say,
keep students.
They infect them with a bug or with a marker, and then they see how the kind of behavior, how that person. Mm.
How
behaves,
they respond and whether it's
how
actually
they respond. And they can actually, with the indication, they can actually say, well, this drug is going to behave like this. If it behaves like this with 50 people, you get a spectrum of results. Mm.
Yeah.
And if the spectrum's in a certain shape, they'll take it forward. And if it's in the wrong shape, they'll say, forget it, son, but we'll take your money anyway. Now, I think the most one of the most exciting things about hVIVA was that 2023 marked the market authorization of the first ever vaccine incorporating human challenge trial data as part of its submission package. So this is something that's gone from quite niche-y in part of they were based in Whitechapel in
yes,
London.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
So not, so quite an interesting historical area. But suddenly it's gone mainstream. So it's highly cash generative business, EBITDA margins 22% in 2023. And yeah. They've got fantastic increasing staff and facility utilization. And, funny enough, they're getting cuter about improving the volunteer recruitment. And also they've been figuring out how to do concurrent multiple trials without the two sort of infecting one another. For the want of a better phrase, they've got a new facility in Canary Wharf opening soon.
They'll get the bankers in there, then, won't they?
Yeah. Well, didn't get it. I got a bonus for a donut. So yeah, I'll go and spend the weekend in a room in Canary Wharf.
yeah, exactly. But yeah, you're right. They seem to have done everything. They're expanding, abroad. What? Just one question. What are sort of like the barriers to entry for this? I presume it's pretty well regulated, so you can't just open up a flipping bedsit and decide to do your own trials, can you? This is really highly regulated stuff.
Oh yeah, you just can't drag. I mean, impoverished student or hungry student, fine. but you just can't put stuff into people and then sort of wave your hands around and say, oh yeah, the drug will do this. This is highly, highly regulated.
Yeah.
And the sort of knowledge required. It's not just, of course, the medical knowledge, but it's the relationships they have with the various regulators to allow them to do this in the first place. So
The confidence.
Mo Khan has got Mo Khan and his team have got a lot of road to run along.
Yeah. No, I think it's a great business. And as you say, it's a picks and shovels play on speeding up the whole drug discovery pipeline. And I've not met this CEO, but he seems to be doing not a foot wrong. So I'm sure he's going to continue in that vein. Okay, let's turn to another sector. You mentioned it earlier on, Illico. Now, this is something that I've owned for about 8 years. It's one of my sort of top picks for 2024. Let me just put it on the chart here. And it's basically does build tech software for the sort of construction industry. And the reason why it's actually worth just mentioning is that yesterday I was on LinkedIn and I saw a little sort of article coming across. They've just launched it's basically called Astra GPT, which is their AI generated application for their Astra Project bit of software. And it does seem as though they're starting to make sort of real traction in terms of, going through this transition, which they have done over the last 3 years from perpetual license to SaaS. I think it's about 75% now is ongoing sort of recurring revenue streams, high margins, sort of like I think it's 90% near enough gross margins. And that because they're coming through that SaaS transition, they should be able to grow the top line sort of 10% plus maybe 15%, something of that sort of region. But because of the high operating gearing, you should see that come through the bottom line. They've got about 12-13p of cash on the balance sheet. And I know you are one of the biggest shareholders of this as well. So I'd just be interested in what your latest thoughts are on Illico, because it really does seem to have now... It's been missed, but it's a quality business with really high USPs. It's been missed by the market. Isn't like, it hasn't been bid up. But once you then, because it's been classed as a bit of a show me story, but once it starts showing, which should be this year in terms of the SaaS transition, then this could do, for my view, I mean, I'm a bull. So, you've got to take it at the beach of hope. But what's your sort of latest view on it?
First of all, I agree. It's quality business and it's very good at what it does. I point out that the EV sales about 1.8, but with an EBITDA margin of 22%.
Yeah.
That means the valuation is just plain wrong.
Yes.
I'd be pointing out that it'd be a market cap of 70 million. Mm-hmm. So it has been left behind by the markets beneath that kind of 100, 150 million sort of boundary beneath which sort of a lot of people don't play just because of the other low liquidity. And it's almost get one of those feelings. It's one of those many companies beneath the 100 million that's being left behind because it's too small, or the liquidity rather is too low for sort of the institutions to play in. And therefore it's a very thin trade.
Mm.
And you're likely to see, unfortunately, an excellent company like that taken for a song. For example, Blanco, 6 months
yes.
ago,
yes.
Was taken out. But that, again, world leader in data erasure.
Yeah, that was.
And for me, Alico is also, unfortunately, a great company, but the wrong price and stuck in the yeah. doom loop.
Yeah, no, you could easily see 100% premium, and it still would go out relatively cheaply. I mean, something yeah. like. I mean, the industry, just give people a bit of context, industry comparatives, you've got Nemenschek in Europe, in Germany, and you've got sort of like Autodesk in the States, also Bentley Systems, and they trade 5 to 10 times sales or 20 times EBITDA. And as I say, two times sales and around about 8 times EBITDA for Alico is just mispriced. There's no, just seem to be anyway.
Yep, bonkers.
I hope we're both right anyway, because I genuinely don't want it being taken over, because I believe if they the sort of the Kirill sort of like opportunity, because they've got such great technology. Again, I'm a ball of this. I mean, great technology. It's replicating that out into the States, and if they do start yes. getting traction, and what was really interesting in their interims, they used as a case study one of the big. West Coast construction guys have started now using it and love it, really do love it. So if you can get more and more of that scale, because America is the biggest build tech market in the world, I think, and the most advanced.
Yeah, I mean, it the sort of money they're spending on their infrastructure.
Mm.
And, obviously the construction market is huge because it's just basically a jolly big country. Yes. But joking aside, there's also sort of the Inflation Reduction Act that Biden's put in. I don't know. I think Trump's going to continue
yes.
it.
Good point. So
they're going to see lots of infrastructure investment upgrade, and also, of course, they're building huge semiconductor fabs
yeah.
to try and take away the risk of exposure to Taiwan.
Yeah.
So you can either play it via Alico. So I'm sure, Paul, your investment there will do very well over the next 3 to 5 years.
Well, I hope so. Anyway,
or Hillin Smith. Hillin Smith.
Yeah, no,
sort of that sort of £1 billion or so market cap company doing galvanized steel. So people listening in can have a go at Alico or
Hillin Smith.
Try the ride with Hillin Smith.
Yeah, well, my namesake definitely should be. Maybe it should be Hillin Staples instead.
Yes.
I don't know. let's move to another one actually in the software sector, which again is branching out into the States. A real sort of leader category killer, Traxys, that I know you like. And this has been sort of like a real thoroughbred for years, because it dominates in sort of providing all the sort of software that the network rail use. And I think it's got a beachhead now in the States to lift and shift that sort of like, scheduling software, which is just best in class out in the States. Do you want to take us through your latest on this one? Because it really is an absolute quality company.
Yeah, this is sort of held this chair for 12 years.
Oh, I see. Longer than me then.
Been on quite a journey with it. It started life as an academic project coming out of Leeds University. And basically what the academics and the mathematicians, operational research guys did at Leeds University was to take the British Rail timetable, or whatever you want to call it, and say, right, how are we going to turn that into what are called scheduling train diagrams for all the drivers and all the crew staff around the UK, so they know where to be at what time, so the trains run on time. So it's a hugely complicated sort of computational analytical project, and they did extremely well out of it. So
the customer certainly needs a lot of help. I mean, there's no chance of getting a train on time nowadays.
And basically, they branched out into various other other sort of, you know, they went into events, they went into sort of traffic monitoring. But since a chap called Chris Barnes has been a
CEO, that's right. Yeah, the CEO.
He's really got a grip of the group since he joined it from Ricardo several years ago. And it, rather than it being a, you know, I'm sure that everyone worked very hard, but rather than it being a, aren't we clever, let's do this kind of thing and let's make it work, he's gone, no, we're going to grow up and be a proper transport technology provider.
Mm.
He's slowly moving it to a broader SaaS operating model rather than the old fashioned sort of licensing.
Yeah, perpetual licenses. Yeah.
That's it. Thank you. Yeah. And he's also upgrading the team in terms of leadership capabilities and accelerate growth to chase larger opportunities. So you're seeing a bit, you know, sort of the lazy thinkers or perhaps the shorter term thinkers are pointing to the fact that EBITDA margins are dipping in its first half to 16% following those investments. But you'd actually trust Chris and the senior team to deliver on those investments and actually come out with a much, much better and a much stronger business going forward. I think also, you know, I mean, you've quite rightly pointed out they've got relationships with Network Rail. So they've got a significant funded phase of development work to enhance its rails hub safety and risk management platform. So funnily enough, a broken rail on a railway is extremely dangerous.
Well, I mean, it's a serious issue, actually, because the states desperately need it because they've had some horrific crashes, haven't they, on their rail network. And it's nowhere near as complex as the UK's. I mean, we've probably got the hardest sort of like, you know, puzzle to solve on scheduling than anywhere else in the world. So it's the best place to go. But the States is a huge market.
Yeah, despite the best efforts of Mr. Beeching almost 60 years ago, shame my age again. The you know, we're still crammed some railway in. And I think it's also worth pointing out that the rail industry here, and even more so in North America, is rather conservative in its outlook. So it's important to have earned a good reputation on earlier projects to win new work. So you know, I think what Traxys has done is to develop relationships with what they're called the TOCs, the train operating companies. I think there's 21 or 22 of them in the UK. And they've actually done some very good work for, say, 3-4 of them in terms of in London. If you've travelled in London, there's the tap in, tap out. That was Traxys software doing that. And it just works.
Yeah.
You know, you don't get cross with the fact you've been ripped off. You know, you've just got the cheap, no matter what the travel you've done in the day, you pay for what you use, but you get the cheapest level.
Yeah.
And I think it's just that reputation for excellence and delivery is going to stand them in very good stead, both in the UK as things become more digital. And as you say, in the US, where just the sheer geographical scale of the network is vast.
Yeah. No, I would agree. I love it. I'm just waiting for an opportunity to get some money and to put some is into that, that's for sure. Another one on the software that's worth just highlighting to investors is Fidel Partners. Now, this is a really under the radar company, about 40 million market cap US. It only listed or IPO'd about a year ago. But the reason why it's interesting, it's dead cheap. And it basically is a world leader in rights management for large corporates and consumers. So companies in the healthcare sector, you've got Hasbro, the toy guys, you've got Sanofi in drug development. And what their software does is allow people to collect and to pay correctly rights and royalties associated with brand licensing. So for instance, you've got a Star Wars toy, for instance, it will help the owner of the Star Wars, Disney, or alternatively the recipient, to pay and to manage and to streamline and to automate all of that. But it's also got brand protection software that is really clever, that basically is going to allow digital rights, if they're used elsewhere within, you know, unlicensed within the internet. Let's be clear about it, AI is basically using people's images incorrectly everywhere. Then this basically picks that up and scrapes it and alerts it. Now, what's really interesting is that a small company market cap, only 40 million pounds, has got 28% of the world's market, and it makes about 80-90% gross margins on this. So it's pre-profitability, so it's not without risk, of clearly, but it's growing at 20% per annum with those type of margins. And what's worth remembering to the liquidity at the moment, because it's a Reg S share, is fairly limited. It only available on Interactive Brokers and I think AJ Bell, but that expires on the 6th of April in a month's time. So it's a high quality software company, trades at about 2x EV to sales, etc. So it's something that people should have a look. I don't know whether you've ever, the liquidity's not great, so it's probably a bit sort of off the beaten track for you here.
Yeah, you know, I was known for being a good truffler, but even this truffler has his limits.
Okay, yeah, no problem. Well, let's move on to one you do know, Warpaint, which again has just been absolutely a real champion of the small cap sector, sort of like Challenger Cosmetics. There's been two big brands that unfortunately I got wrong. There was Revolution Beauty about 3 years ago, which listed, and I thought that was going to do well. You guys actually avoided it, I think.
And we then, did.
And you went for Warpaint instead. And I wish I'd followed your lead there. Do you want to take us through your latest views on Warpaint? Because it's done extremely well. It's not that cheap now. And so I guess the question would be, even though it's a real star home run, would you ever consider trimming if it got to a large position on this, or you just run it?
We've, as you pointed out, I was in Warpaint from the very start. They had one or two bumps along the way, but when it when something goes as well as this one does, very often you do. Yes.
That's a trait of your stock picking, isn't it? So the bottom left, top right.
Yeah, we do. Yes. Anyway, don't get me started.
Sorry about that. It's a red rag to a bull, that one, isn't it?
Yeah. I've had nothing stronger than Fanta for lunch, so let's just...
Okay, yeah, okay.
So basically what you would very often happen in a portfolio is you'd start off with maybe 1%, 1.5% exposure. You'd sort of go tut when you, that low point after the float, you sort of tut and talk to the management and just try and say, what you on, boys, you know, what's going on, what you're doing with the business. But when you've got the two founders have still got a significant portion of the business, working night and day to fix the bump in the road which they hit. Basically, you just let it run. Now, over time, you would let typically 25 bips out after a good news. But sometimes on a stock like this, you know, it might well be 3-3.5% of your portfolio. You let 25 bips go at the start of the week and it's back up to 4% by the end of the month.
It sounds like NVIDIA.
Yeah, it's just a pleasure running a position like that, because you've got two founders who are absolutely, first of all, love the business, know everybody, and just sort of love cosmetics. You've got a fantastic business which is spitting out cash, and you've got wonderful product innovation. So they were the first ones, the first retailer, consumer sort of group that started talking about vegan products.
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't know that.
So vegan shaving cream for the gentlemen.
Yeah, no, good idea.
Well, what they did for the ladies, I just said, very good, boys. You know far more than me. You can turn a profit out of that, you go for it. You know?
That's
your job, not mine. Yeah. But sort of getting back, you know, sort of it's on about 20x now, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, 21x. Yeah, but it's about 9 million of cash, so it's got a bit. You know, if you stripped out the cash, it'd come down a bit.
Yeah, but the thing is, they had what's so great about Warpaint is that they've got these wonderful relationships with, the various retailers dotted in the UK, and of course moving into the US, but it's their gross product margin remains so robust.
Yeah.
So even though you've got this sort of challenging consumer environment, you know, sort of the cash contribution of everything they sell makes a turn. And it's sort of, you know, why that trading update back in January, it said it will, the group will report PBT not less than £18 million, which is somewhat strikingly ahead of the 7.7 they reported in 2022. So for me, you know, sort of, okay, it's getting up there. In another life, I'd be letting go of the shares 10, 15, 20 bips at a time. But still, it's just a fantastic business. So, you know, go with the flow and enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a 300 million market cap and there's no stopping this. It could get to a billion. Who knows? I mean, you know, once you get to that billion level, then I guess, well, there must be on the radar of a few bigger brands who need a bit of top line growth, I guess. Yeah,
it's just the creativity of the two CEOs, the co-CEOs. And they are, you know, very often when you see a co-CEO team, you wonder just how sort of joined up the thinking is. But in the case of Warpaint, you couldn't put a cigarette paper between them. I'm sure they have some right ding-dongs between them, but I'm sure it's behind soundproof closed doors when they do have a, shall we say, a full and frank debate.
Okay. Here's another one, basically, which is sort of like a bit of a fallen angel. Gooch and House Co. It came out with a profit warning about a few weeks ago, etc.
Yeah.
It does sort of advance photonics lasers largely into defense, healthcare, life sciences, into aerospace as well. It's really high margin type sort of business. Sort of, I think it's 15-20% EBIT margins. But they basically said that they had seen some destocking in their supply chains. Their order book was actually up. And so there's this strength elsewhere. And I think it's personally, if I looked at it, let me just put the chart up. Personally, if I looked at it, I mean, I know the business has got absolute brilliant IPR and is one of the sort of like, you know, the real crown jewels in the UK small cap sector for its technology. This looks to me as a transitory, albeit with one of that sort of, I don't like using that word ever, transitory issue, temporary issue that should sort itself out, because defense sector, life sciences sector is definitely improving and there aren't that many people that can do their type of technology. So my view on this one would be, just as a top level, would be, it'd be sort of like, you know, if you're interested in this industrial technologies type of stuff, it could be taken out easily by a trade buyer because it's trading at a pretty low level. But equally, it should be able to, you know, get that profitability going, given the level of, you know, USP and unique IPR it has. I don't know if you've ever looked at this one.
Yeah, I used to own this one as well.
Oh, did you? Oh, okay.
Yeah, this is a very, as you say, a very interesting company based in Ilminster.
Yeah, that's it.
Just outside Taunton.
Yeah,
and they for years did a very nice business making stuff called Q switches, which is basically, I won't get technical, don't worry. It's basically a crystal. Now I remember when you were a wee lad in a hot. And at the hot day of the hose pipe, if you put your finger into the end of the hose pipe, the pressure would build up.
Yes.
And you could point it at someone you didn't like, and you get a spurt of water for about half a second, wouldn't you? Then it'd go back to a dribble.
Yeah.
Well, rather than doing, think of that, rather than doing it once every 10 seconds, doing it, what you can do with a Q switch is you can do that, say, a million times a second, and you can do that with light rather than with water.
Oh, right.
So you can turn a low continuous laser into a high powered pulse one.
Wow.
So that's quite smart. So their reputation they had, they developed around that. They took into other areas of photonics dealing or manipulation of light. And what they've, rather than, they started off, as I say, Q switches, other components, then they moved into subsystems. And then, so the margins improved, but then they came under pressure as others competed. So there's this constant need to innovate and deliver, as whilst at the same time dealing with price competition from overseas. So what they've done, they moved the Q-switch manufacturer from Ilminster to China. They had some more sort of high-tech facilities out in the US, which they've rationalized. But it's just how they just this cost cutting, which has been undertaken by the newish CEO, unfortunately, hasn't been able to keep up with the dynamics, as you point out, in the customer chain. Now it is transitory, so this looks like an interesting entry point for those that like this kind of stuff. And also, it's very interesting to note that there's going to be a lot of defense spending over the next 5 years, whether we like it or not, because of the very obvious events in Ukraine and what have you. And what people have figured out, the boffins at the defense institutions have figured out, that if you use light to transmit information, it's very hard to be hacked. Whereas if you have an electrical signal, it's still difficult, but it's not as hard. I mean, it's not impossible with light. So there's a lot of work going on there to make sure that communications, or even sort of being able to operate a jet aircraft, transmit the information within a jet aircraft, so you can't bombard it with electrical signals to confuse it. So I could probably waste the rest of the Friday afternoon talking.
Yeah, okay. Anybody who's interested, they did say in the last training update they were seeing some good orders of laser periscopes for armored vehicles, presumably for tanks. So it's got every type of use possible. And just to correct what I said earlier on, the margins actually are only about 8% EBIT margins, but given the IPR, they should be double that. And if you basically got anywhere near 15%, the PE ratio would fall well below 10. So it just shows there's a lot of value in there, and it still pays a dividend, 2.7% yield. So if you're into turnarounds of high IP businesses, then this looks like the one. And if it is just transitory, then if it stays that price, somebody's going to buy them out. No doubt about it. Okay, we've got, let's move to a consumer, another one. We've got Ultimate Products, which has been really surprising, this one, for me, because it basically does homeware products, I think, sort of like pottery stuff for in your kitchen and this sort of stuff. And it's been really resilient during the, it had a boom time when everybody was locked down. They wanted to do some cooking. But over the last 18, 20 months, it's still done pretty well, actually. Do you want to take us through your latest views on this one? Because I think it trades at about just over 9x PE, plays a 5% dividend yield.
Just plain wrong.
I was just going to say,
plain wrong. This again is an absolutely cracking company, belting company, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
Based in Oldham.
Yeah.
It's owner of a number of leading homeware brands. Salter's been going since 1760.
That's it, yeah.
Beldre, and that's been going since 1872. And these brands have real resonance, not just with you, me. You can't say your wife anymore, can you?
Okay, my partner.
I love baking bread, me. but also overseas.
Yeah.
Plays very well in Germany and in France, and indeed the company itself sells to over 300 retailers in more than 38 countries. So it just shows the power of the brand. 80% of UK households hold at least one of the group's products. If you're ever going to see you on the Great British Bake Off, Paul, you probably use some Salter scales.
I could just about boil an egg, okay?
Yeah, put your penny on.
I'm good at toast. That's about it. Burning it.
But there's some qualities about some qualities and properties about this company, which really really shone through, as you quite rightly point out, over the last few years. I mean, there's an ongoing program where it's delivering improved operating margins, thanks to cost rationalization via automation in its processes around the group. It's got a very large warehouse in Oldham, so they're doing all sorts of funky automation in there. They've got a very good set of relationships, fully enough, with supermarkets. So those supermarkets beginning to overcome overstocking issues. So we're going to see some sort of normalized stock positions, a better trend around orders going forward. So you're going to see continued, you know, ultimate products going to continue doing very well. But it's something that discovered when the pilot of that large cargo ship lost his bet that he couldn't turn the ship around in the Suez Canal.
Oh, yes, years ago, about 3 years ago. He got jammed in there to the diagonal.
Yeah, and it blocked. And of course, not just the ship itself, but it
blocked the whole canal, didn't it?
Yeah, fouled up everything. And we were sort of scratching our heads saying, boys, you know, you ship from China. You know, what's going on? Everyone else is complaining.
Yeah.
Why haven't you come a cropper? And they just turned around, very feet on the ground people, and said, well, you know, didn't we tell you we've got this bespoke IT system where we track every single consignment of goods? So we can tell a supermarket if 8 weeks before it's due to be delivered, it's going to be
Wow.
So they just took it. Don't all people do that? And we just went, no, can you show us this bespoke? And they goes, no, it's just a computer thing, you know. Say, no, it's incredibly clever. Just tell me that, say this again. And so, well, let's say they want a consignment of scales. They know when it leaves the factory in Shanghai. They know when it leaves the port in Shanghai. They almost track it around the world through whatever straits. So they know when it's going to arrive.
They should sell that software to somebody else, spin it out.
Yeah, well, we were sort of scratching our heads going,
yeah,
you know, guys, you know, you just, can you make a bit more? No, we're a wholesaler of household goods. All right, okay.
Unbundling opportunity, that software company underneath. So
it's so impressive. And, you know, they got, just going to your point about the sub 10 times PE ratio, now they've got a net debt to EBITDA currently of one times. They've got a payout ratio of 50% for dividends. And I think what they're going to do, what they said they're going to do, they're going to keep that gearing at one time, but they're going to do some share buybacks just to keep it at that level of one. So there's a little bit of everything here.
Mm.
If you want a re-rating story, you want a sensible capital allocation policy and a share buyback, this share price is just wrong.
Yeah, and an unbundling opportunity.
Yeah.
I would agree.
They're the sort of people that would say, if you say, let's put AI or artificial intelligence into your RNS, the second word would be off.
Yeah, okay. All right, okay. Well, let's move to another one. It's called ME Group, which is basically the old Photo Me business that operates sort of photo booths and also does sort of like launderettes as well, I think, in terms of sort of like, you know, telematics connecting to those, sort of like allow people to go and clean their underwear at 3 a.m. 24/7, but also to get, you know, sort of like photographs for the post office or for passports and stuff like this. And the shares are still pretty cheap. They've recovered a bit, but they're trading about 12 times PE, but a 4% dividend yield, about a 600 million. I mean, it's one of those companies that people would think, where's the growth going to become? And then they deliver it.
I think this again is a sort of a quite misunderstood stock. The CEO Serge Krasnyansky has been in there for a very long time. From memory, he or his family own about 20-25% of the outstanding share capital.
Yeah,
and but he's been actually extremely successful in diversifying away from. They used to manufacture machines when you used to take a roll of film into Boots. They used to make those massive machines that sat behind the counter. They stopped making those and realized that, first of all, photo booths, which you go into the post office or train station or whatever, will always typically be a Photo Me booth.
Yeah.
But there's also ongoing need for biometric identification. So demand for photo ID will remain high. So that's one strand of their business. They also, as you point out, have this unattended laundry service, which was proved very successful. They started in France, and basically, because these are huge machines, they could act. What they realized was that small sort of bistros and restaurants could use them to clean their own linen.
Yes, good point. Yeah, catering side.
It proved very popular with those guys because it was cash only.
Oh, really? Right. Okay. Well, that sounds like somebody's doing a bit of laundering there.
So
cash only, mate.
Proved very popular with, say, sort of the small SME culinary side of La France Profonde.
Yes.
They used to, I think they put them in sort of old disused petrol stations so people could get out of the van, take the laundry out, not get wet, bung it into the machine, put in your 10 euros or 15 euros or whatever it was, and then go and do your food shopping. And also they're moving into digital printing kiosks. So funny enough, despite the youngsters of today living on the mobile phone, they do occasionally like to print.
Yeah.
Instead, smartphone. So there's a thing called Print Me. And also there's a strand of within the group called Feed Me, which is vending equipment for food.
Of course, yeah.
But for me it's the photo and the wash. Those two streams. They're going to do a next generation photo booth. It's going to be rolled out across Europe. And if you want to buy a packet of cigarettes in Japan, you need photo ID.
You're right, actually. I hadn't thought about that. There's going to be a lot of sort of maybe government regulation forcing this sort of stuff. And even if there isn't, then internationalizing their expertise they have in their chosen markets currently, spreading out more geographically, which should drive the top line growth, presumably. And I was just looking, actually, they make 21% EBIT margin. So the operating leverage of this thing must be really good on a gross margin.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's good business. Yeah. Very good.
Good. Business. Okay. We like it. That one may get us done. Let's move to another one, which is a bit smaller that I'd like to read. It's basically Through Vision that has been through the mill, to say the least. Just recently. but basically what it does is it does scanning machines, or it's sort of like high volume scanning machines. So if people wanted to go to a retail outlet, or to go into, particularly for retail distribution centers, RDCs, etc., you get high volume of people, and it allows these scans machines in real time. We can identify sort of concealed products, and that can be whether it's weapons, but also anything theft and stuff. And it's won some quite interesting contracts, one out in the States with a big sort of brand, et cetera, out there. And there's also, this system has been sort of like honed with the likes of Next, and I think with JD Sports in mind. So it's whenever there's a situation where there's lots of people and they're going through a small sort of play opening of an entrance, et cetera, and you want to sort of check whether they're carrying anything they shouldn't be, or carrying anything out they shouldn't be. Or likewise, if they're going through sort of like, I don't know, customs or prisons, and they've got, I don't know, drugs, or whether they've got, sort of like weaponry, et cetera, concealed somewhere that you can't do. They've been through the mill. They do have quite interesting technology, but I mean, obviously this is, you've got to be fairly risk tolerant for this one. It's, what's the market cap? About 30 million, fairly illiquid. I don't know if you've ever had a look at this sort of technology. Yeah. Is it best in class? Is it any good?
Yeah.
I mean, it
does seem. Yeah, I used to own these shares as well, actually.
Paul. Oh, I see. Oh, okay.
So this company is based in Abingdon, in Oxfordshire.
Yeah, and, I know. What
it does is that all of us, our body temperature is about 37 degrees C. So that means we emit heat.
Yeah.
And what this company does, it detects a certain type of heat, which we all emit.
Mm.
And what happens is, if you put, say, a bag of drugs, or when we went to the site in Oxford, the police had been around and they wanted to test it. So the police has got hold of an AK-47 Kalashnikov. And no, it's serious, serious.
Just to Kalashnikov, test it.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah, they had a Kalashnikov rifle, and they took the bolt and the firing pin out.
Flipping
so it was
out.
Just a real, just a nasty gun.
Yeah,
it was
yeah,
just, a,
yeah,
it was just
yeah.
a lump. It was just a lump of metal.
Yeah.
And then they said, "You're a big bloke here, and you're tall." So they gave me a big coat. Then I shoved this Kalashnikov sort of down my front, and then did the coat up. Yeah. I looked like a Michelin man about to rob a bank.
So you didn't have one of those big Russian hats on as well, did you? With
you
dark
didn't need
glasses.
A scanner. You didn't need a scanner to say you're going to be a naughty boy.
Yeah.
But then I stood in front of the scanner, and it very accurately showed, because the gun was stopping that front part of my from a chin down
yeah.
to my belt, stopping emitting that heat. So it picked up beautifully.
Right, okay.
The shape of the gun.
Yeah.
And it's exactly the same with drugs and also clothes. I think, as you've pointed out, next JD Sports, though, I think Fraser's might do it.
Yeah, you're probably right. Yeah, yeah.
Up in Derbyshire. Because it lets, because as you say, it's very, very quick.
Yeah.
So people have stopped work. So you're not sort of impinging on their time to, you know, leave the premises.
Yeah.
So no, it's the thing is, we were talking earlier about very conservative customers in
yes.
the rail industry.
Yeah.
I think if you take them, multiply it by 100, that's US customs and mass transportation people.
Yeah. Okay.
And also with the, very often with the scanners, there's perhaps understandable concern about the level of detail that the scanner shows.
Yeah, okay.
Now, you want to pick up a gun, but you're not necessarily got the mind of a 12-year-old puerile boy who wants to see perhaps, you know, bumps
yeah,
and curves.
Set the alarm off.
Yeah, bumps and curves that he shouldn't be seeing.
Yeah, okay.
So, you know, funnily enough, there's a lot of pushback and say, well, just how much detail does it show of the underlying person? And it's just fuzzy. It's just this fuzzy outline, and then there's the gun or the bag of drugs or whatever. So it doesn't show, you know, sort of detail that would make James Bond blush, for example.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, you could actually get that. This is, if you're a young lad like me and you, maybe that's a great. It's a great game, that,
yes.
isn't it? Take
yeah.
stuff. See what you can get in. You know what you
yeah.
can't get out. just play with the system. I bet they'd love us too, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
They'd kick us out.
Yeah.
Sorry, you guys. Go. You're about
off
to say.
Off you pop. Yeah.
I know. Yeah. Okay. Well, let's move to the last one. Bit bigger business. XP Pensions. 500 million market cap company. It does sort of pensions administration and consultancy to lots of sort of, like, you know, defined benefit schemes in the UK, maybe abroad as well, but certainly and presumably sort of contributes. I guess this is sort of like a regulatory driven story. 15 times PE, random, just south of 4%, 3.8% dividend yield. What's your sort of your latest on this one? Because we don't cover it that often, actually.
No, it's come from behind, as
yes.
you might say.
Yes.
It's another company with excuse me, with co-CEOs.
Yeah.
But once again, they couldn't put a cigarette paper between them. For a while after it first floated, people said, "Man, that's rather a dry subject, pensions administration."
But the shares aren't very dry, are they? Look at that.
No.
The shares have been great.
Which when you hear people say that, you think, ah, I'm onto something here.
Yeah.
Really, you hit the nail on the head when you introduced it, when you said it was the pace of regulatory reform or ongoing regulatory change and regulatory change to come. I think people woke up when the EU did the GMP the GMP rectification in terms of the treatment of male and female and treatment schemes.
Oh, that, okay, yes. That was the equalisation, wasn't it?
Exactly. I think that was you're talking pensions, but that was dry for pensions. And the fact that XPS Pensions have got, you know, continue to do a very good job for very large pension funds in the UK, suddenly everyone went, hang on a minute, this is a quality outfit, and you can see the effect on the share price.
Yeah.
Also, they've got excellent reputation, very good at winning new business wins. So they announced a contract win with John Lewis back in February. So that always helps. And also, certainly within their pensions actuarial and consulting division, things like the regulatory reform, such as the general code of practice for pension schemes, that's coming in. That's only going to produce more work. You've got further material regulatory change with the introduction of new rules of how actuarial valuations should be carried out. Yeah. Okay, this is dry stuff, but it's very legal, very technical. And just think of, you know, sort of some of the pension scandals in the past. This is going to, people want these things done properly, every T crossed, every I dotted, and XPS pensions, 500 million market cap, but you know, the PE of what, 14 times or something?
Yeah, it's you're just, right. Yeah, yeah. It looks
just wrong.
Yeah. It's amazing, isn't it? That's sort of been a recurrent theme, really, of what we've discussed on many of these companies. It just looks the small and micro cap. You've really got a sort of like a I don't know, a polarization. You've got the US big tech and all things sort of like, you know, mega cap, which is pricing in a really sort of like, you know, bullish scenario. And then you're on the other end of that sort of like spectrum, you've got small and mid caps, which is pricing in the hardest, seems to be the hardest recession ever. And it just seems totally different, two ends of the spectrum.
Yeah, this is something everyone I would suspect that's interested in markets has been reading about. I read a couple of weeks ago the S&P 500, nearly 60% or 70% of the stocks in the S&P 500 are trading above their 200-day moving average, which would suggest very robust or expectations for robust, healthy trading, Goldilocks scenario, soft landing, all of the above in the US. And here in the UK, we're back to where we started with the doom loop. You've got companies doing very well. I mean, we've a nice selection of companies, you know, some that we've spoken about today, consumer, bit of makeup, bit of infectious diseases, bit of software.
Yeah.
And there are just, everyone is just saying, so what?
Yeah. Well, it's a great way then to sort of head into the weekend for people to sort of do some more, you know, sort of research on their own and have a look at those ideas. There is another question in, but I can't read German. I'm not sure it's German. I think it's sort of like Chinese or something like that. It's in a different language. So I need RSW or something like that to be able to translate it, or Duolingo or something to be able to find out what that question is. So apologies for who sent that one in, but I can't read it because it's English. Okay, well, brilliant. Well, thanks for your input there, Ian. And look forward in touching base going forward. So thanks again.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Cheerio.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.